that I find in It's a Wonderful Life. The story of a kid who is removed from his world and is allowed to see what happened to his family and his community because he was taken. He is allowed to find out what he meant to everyone, even though he was worthless. That's really the soul. That's the part of the story that appealed to me. Yeah.
And technically, in terms of a challenge.
Well, it certainly was a challenge. There were elements in this film that I was told could not be done. For instance, the lion, the computer-generated lion. They said, this is beyond what we can do. We can't do hair. We can't do this lion's mane in a computer-generated, effect. And I said, well, in 8 months when we're shooting this movie, you will be able to do it. So get back to work.
I was gonna say, the fact that your background is in this field made you as a director pretty formidable, I think, because you weren't asking out of ignorance. You knew enough.
Well, I came from the art direction side of effects, and I was never really familiar with the technical end of it at all. I was the guy who would design something, and then they would say, "Well, wait a minute, this is going to be hard to build. What if we put this kind of wing on it?"
Maybe ignorance was a blessing then.
It certainly wasn't a disadvantage. I don't want to know what can't be done. I want these guys to show me what they could do, and they I was completely blown away with the stuff that they came up with.
Were you involved at all with Allsburg? Was he anywhere?
I never met Ben Allsburg. Yeah.
Did it help because of your, I don't say your inside track, but having inside knowledge of ILM? Did that interaction really facilitate things on this film?
I don't think it did, really. ILM has changed so much. When I left ILM as a staff employee in 1983, and in the past 10, 12 years, they have gone from, they've completely changed the way they work. It's now almost entirely computer generated. I've been told that they have, the only facility that has more Silicon Graphics workstations is the Pentagon. So it's all computers now. And,
can you speak about working with a live action special effects as opposed to the computer generated? I mean, the different challenges and
the computer generated effects are actually a lot easier during production because you don't have to shoot the actors in front of a blue screen. You don't have to build a separate set. You don't have to build miniature sets. As an example, the sequence where the stampede chases them down the hallway was all shot on one set that we had rigged to implode and to blow out. We ran the actors through the set on one pass, and then we reset the cameras and we did another take where we blew the walls out. So it's a lot more in-camera stuff, and then you make it work in post-production. It's actually a lot easier, less time-consuming than the old way of doing it.
And the live-action ones?
The animatronic stuff. I don't think we broke any new technical ground there. It was just, there was a lot of puppeteering work. There were certainly some challenges. Having the pelican out on a rock in the middle of a river with the puppeteers literally underwater inside this rock, it was a lot tougher for them than it was for me. But
the crocodiles,
I thought really worked well.
Could you talk a little bit about the uniqueness that Robin Williams brings specifically to this part, and from your perspective in general?
I know that Robin didn't want to do this project unless the story the father-son story and this fish-out-of-water man-child element of the story was made more prominent. In fact, he had passed on an earlier draft of the script because that the story wasn't as focused on that element of the story. And I think that he brought a lot of warmth and a lot of vitality to the part, in addition to the comedy. He was conscious that this was not the kind of movie where you basically turn the cameras on and he goes wild and he departs from the script. He was conscious that it was not that kind of a film, and that he had very real restrictions to work within. And I think he really did an amazing job.
When did you first see It's a Wonderful Life?
When did I first see it? 1959.
And do you remember that experience? Obviously, you remember. What do you remember about the effect it had on you as a kid?
I remember thinking. I remember thinking that it wasn't specifically that film. It was a series of films that I saw around that time. But I remember thinking that movies can really change the way people think and can influence people much more than any other media that I was familiar with. Yeah. I mean, movies can really change people's minds. The other film I saw at that time was The Alamo. I don't know quite what effect that had on me. Hopefully none.
In all your films, you have an uplifting kind of
attitude. I think that's important. You know, I think that, I like making films for kids. I think it's important to make good films for kids. I don't think there's, for me, the most important kind of film you can make is something that teaches kids compassion and kindness. You know, I mean, they can see violence, you know, anywhere else. They don't need to go to the movies to see it.
There appears to be something too in that with Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, the yard becomes a jungle. Here, a house becomes a jungle. There's just something in you that responds to the terrors of the everyday. You
know? Well, the interesting thing about both movies, and I haven't really sat down and thought about the comparisons, is that you take something that you're very familiar with and you turn it into something else. You juxtapose alien elements onto something that you're very familiar with. You know, in the case of Jumanji, it's you bring all these animals into this kid's home, this community. In Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, it's more that, you know, the most familiar ground you know, your backyard, becomes something that is completely alien to you when you're a quarter inch tall. You know, but
maybe it's that we're never very far away.
That's
from
true.
Those things.
And that's true.
Again, is there something in your own upbringing, in your own imaginative mindset? That
well, I know that that imagining that you're tiny is something that I think is universal to kids.
The borrowers.
Yeah, I think it is. And the other thing that's universal to kids is thinking, perhaps with dread, what would happen to me if I was somewhere where my parents couldn't help me, if I was completely alone, if I was off by myself somewhere, you know, and I had to take care of myself, or if I was, and what if I was not only abandoned by my father, but if I was swept up in the trash and thrown away, you know, what would that be like? Hitchcock frightened me a lot.
Which one?
Psycho. That was frightening.
And how old
were you? I was under 10. I'm not sure when the first time I saw it.
It's
but the Tingler frightened me.
Homicidal.
Yeah.
Isn't it wonderful to be of an age when William Castle can frighten you?
Yeah, it's great. Nice I remember being frightened by the attack of the 50-foot woman. That's really scary. that's still scary.
Did you see Psycho early enough that the shower scene was actually a surprise?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I saw it. I don't know if I saw it as... when did that come out? 50?
60.
Was it 60? Mm-hmm. Then I probably saw it first run, yeah. Yeah. It was scary.
Was there ever a real game called Jumanji? And will there be one after the film?
I'm sure there's going to be some kind of interactive CD-ROM mm-hmm. kind of game. I mean, they're missing a bet if they don't come up with something.
It doesn't exist. I think it exists already as a game, isn't it?
I don't know. I haven't seen it. I think a game company is planning a board game version as well.
Does it mean anything, the word Jumanji?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know.
He made it up.
He's made it up. Yeah.
Did he say that?
Other films that you've done. I mean, there's one in the middle, The Rocketeer. In hindsight, what didn't click? I mean, Disney was touting that it's going to be a $100 million movie, and it just didn't seem to take off.
Well, I don't like to blame Disney for things, and I'm not going to, because the film has flaws to it. But I don't think that it was marketed correctly, and it's as much my fault as anybody's. The one sheet, this Art Deco one sheet that... You know, it's such a wonderful piece of art, mm-hmm. I think was very misleading in a lot of ways. I know that there were people who thought it was an animated film who hadn't seen any TV spots or trailers or anything, and they, you know, from the one sheet, you're not sure what it is. I think that as good as Bill Campbell was, he wasn't a star at the time. I think that it didn't help the film as much as having a star in that role could have.
I thought it was a very exciting movie, but you said it has flaws. Can you point out something you're not happy with?
I insisted on playing the movie straight. I believe the studio had a more campy kind of tongue-in-cheek film in mind, but I wanted to really stick with the period. I wanted to show the 30s as I believe they really should be shown. I wanted to stay true to the character, which was based on a fairly recent comic book. And you know, I think it was a combination of a lot of things. I still like the film.
What's your fondest memory from making?
I have dozens of fond memories from making it, but it was. I guess my fondest memory is that I'm a big fan of the 30s, the music and the style and the design and the clothes and everything about the 30s. I think is a great period. It was really great to be given this giant toy box full of cars and airplanes. Characters and special effects and.
Well, speaking of toy boxes, I think you couldn't have a bigger one than what you played with in this film.
No, that's true.
In a film which is laden with logistic nightmares, what was the most difficult hurdle for you to overcome?
The challenge for me was not to let the effects take over, and start telling the story. I've seen that happen before. Where it's such an important, integral part of the film that unless you tame the effect sequences, they will take over and they'll start. The film will be an excuse to have a bunch of exciting effect sequences. And the challenge for me was to keep the story, which is in itself very simple, about this kid who. Comes back after 26 years. It was to keep that story prominent.
Now I heard people talking, leaving the theater, and they go, God, that could almost have been a Steven Spielberg movie. I don't know if that would be a compliment to you.
It's certainly not an insult.
a throwback. I mean, there seemed to be a period when he, mm-hmm. the whole recapturing the childhood. And
Terry Gilliam. Mm-hmm.
No, but Jurassic Park because of the
animatronics. Yeah, the CG, yeah. Well, I'm a big fan of Stevens. You know, I've worked for him several times. Raiders, the first two Indiana Jones films, and on Always, and I feel very fortunate that I have been allowed to work with Steven and with George Lucas. I mean, it's like working with Steven and George is like going to the best film school in the world, and I really feel like most of what I know about this business I learned from, not the business so much as the craft. I learned from George and Stephen.
You mentioned this extravagance of these visions, though. Do you harbor a secret desire to make a movie with two people in a small room?
Yeah, character study.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I certainly do. But you know, it's almost. Stop me if I've said this, because someone else asked the same question, but it's almost as hard to make a low-budget, cheap movie as it is to make a huge, you know, $65 million complicated film with, you know, ton of special effects, because you still have to control everything that goes through the lens. I mean, everything that goes on film still has to mean something, you know, it has to be part of the storytelling.
Things are more exposed in the intimate.
Yeah, that's true. But you know, the other advantage of doing a big film is that you can hire a lot of really talented people and delegate responsibility, people you trust, you know.
But also, wouldn't it be harder to get the okay from the studios to do something a la Bergman at this point, unless you've proven yourself at the box office?
That's true. That's true. I mean, I was really fortunate with my first film, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. It was sort of being in the right place at the right time, and the studio just took a chance, you know. But I don't think that happens that much anymore.
There's some question about the movie maybe being too scary for young kids.
I think that there's a limit. I think that under 7 is probably dodgy, you know. I think it may be too intense. Is that the way the warning goes? Maybe too intense for younger children.
Or it contains carbon monoxide or
right.
something.
Did you have a misconception all of Robin Williams? I mean, were you worried that maybe he would improvise too much on the set? Did you have a talk with him? I mean, how did you work with him?
We did have a talk early on, and when Robin did improvise, it was always within the realm of what his character would be doing. He never went completely wild. Robin did a lot of variations, and we had an understanding that he would do anything I wanted as long as I gave him one take at the end where he could do what he wanted to.
And is there anything that you had to cut out that maybe just for whatever reason was just wonderful? But
there was a lot of stuff we cut out, yeah. There was a lot of stuff that took time, you know, that we would have, that affects the pace of a sequence. You know, where you want, you just need to move it along a little faster. There was
Something
a lot of funny stuff.
It really, may have been hysterical, but
there was stuff that definitely was hysterical. There was a scene where he's in the floor and he can't talk, so he has to use sign language. He's, you know, it's they're basically playing charades with the kid to try to get him to go get the axe, but you didn't believe it because they're surrounded by spiders and they're about to all be, you know, bitten by these spiders, and so. Okay, say it. Let's do one where you tell him to go get the axe, you know. And that's what we ultimately use.
So how would you characterize that last take? All of the last takes. How would you characterize
wild.
His last take?
Wild. And Robin knew that we probably wouldn't use it, although we did use elements from a lot of them. He said, look, I know you're not going to use this. I just got to get it out of my system. And he would do something that was completely off the wall. And sometimes usable.
Make a great reel at a party.
That's right. Oh, it did.
What about Kirsten?
Kirsten's amazing.